Hello and welcome to View from the Roundhouse, our podcast for Fremantle Shipping News. It's great to be here today. This is week two of our campaign roundup, and I'm joined today by one of the real veterans of the press gallery in Western Australia, Peter Kennedy. I think pretty much everyone in WA will be very familiar with him, but Peter's CV is much longer than that. Spent plenty of time at the Herald in Sydney before that, and he's been reporting on news and current affairs, what, better part of 40-odd years, would that be, or maybe more?
Oh, well, since 1970, Martin. So
I think
that's
that's considerably 55
taken over
years.
50.
I think you'll know a thing or two. But Peter, it's really good to have you here, and we're in the throes of the election campaign at the moment. I thought I might just if you can give me a wrap up as to how you think our two major teams are travelling, that being Labor and Liberal. We might touch on some of the others shortly. On another week during the campaign, who's had a good week, a bad week, or something in between?
Well, it's getting close to the midway point of the campaign, and I think Labor started the better, because the Liberals or the coalition, a couple of months ago, then Cyclone Alfie and a few things like that interfered, and then the tariff war from the United States, thanks to Donald Trump, that sort of gatecrashed the campaign in more recent times. So I thought Labor was doing much, much better early on, and that was reflected in opinion polls early this week. Particularly, News Poll in the Australian newspaper had the Labor Party leading two-party preferred 52-48, which would have been great news for Mr. Albanese. But I think this week the Liberals have steadied, and they've jettisoned some policies that were sort of lead in the saddlebags, and they're starting to get into stride. Whether it's too late remains to be seen.
It is always a little bit difficult coming from behind. Once the campaign started, you've got to shift people's established perceptions. But yes, I think that one thing that we saw that was quite interesting was the a backtrack for Mr. Dutton on the working from home for Commonwealth public servants. And this seemed to attract a lot of criticism, particularly from working women who might be trying to balance, family and work. So they've acknowledged they've got it wrong, and they've wound that back and said they won't do it. This is always a bit of an interesting one for me. Is it better for you to just ignore it, hope it goes away, or is it better for you to actually say, look, I didn't think we got that right, change it now, cauterize the fallout? What's your view on that?
Well, this was a dilemma for the Liberals, of course, I think it was clear, as you indicate, the policy was causing them a lot of grief. It was causing a lot of distraction as well for other messages that they were trying to get through. So you come to that sort of fork in the road, and I think they decided, well, it's going to cause us pain to get rid of it. For it'll cause we'll be accused of doing a backflip, etc., for a couple of days. Let's wear that. Let's change it. Let's get out of it. We'll wear that pain for a couple of days, then we can hopefully get clear air on the policies that they believe are beneficial for them. They decided to do that. They took the pain, I think they're starting to emerge. Not only that, Martin, it was also the policy that they were going to junk 40,000 Commonwealth public servants, the belief that most of them were in Canberra, and it didn't matter anyway because Canberra's a Labor city. But that was causing them pain too, I think, and they decided to do a rethink there. So take a bit of pain at the beginning of the week and hope you get clear air after that. And I think there are signs that that's starting to happen.
Yeah, I think even though Canberra's a Labor city, there's the marginal seat of Eden Monaro, which has a lot of public servants in it in Queanbeyan. And then there's, of course, the Senate race where they're hoping to win back a Senate seat. So there's not really any area out in the country that doesn't have some potential gains for an opposition. So it's you've got to keep all these things in mind.
Well, you do, I mean, with the public servants, I guess there's also a view in the community that look, if you're in the service industry, you can't work from home. If you're, if you're a truckie, a tradie, working in shops, etc., you can't work from home. Perhaps public servants, a special group, can. And there was perhaps there was this little bit of this friction between the public sector and the private sector, but the Liberals decided it wasn't working. It was quite clear it wasn't working. and get out of it. You know, fair bump, play on.
Now, the other thing that happened this week, which is always an interesting point in the campaign, was the leaders' debate, where we had Mr. Dutton and Mr. Albanese face off in front of a group of undecided voters and questions put to them. How do you think both leaders performed there, Peter, and did it shift votes?
Well, there seemed to be a view that both leaders performed creditably, and that they sort of were polite to each other, Martin, and that as far as the putting their views across and scoring it, I think there was a mixed bag. As I recall, Channel 7 scored it slightly in favour in with Mr. Albanese. And the Australian newspaper scored it for Mr. Dutton. So it indication, and I think an another point of view was it was a dead heat. So there wasn't a great deal between them. But the important thing is, as far as viewers are concerned, that the leaders look as if they're doing the job. The leaders look as if they're up to the job. They know their policies. They're able to put them across, and viewers can sit back and say, "Oh yeah, he knows his stuff." Or you know he looks the more creditable, I suppose, and away you go. But remember, there's another debate coming up this coming week on the ABC, and I think this debate will be much better watched from the point of view of audience, and coming later in the campaign could well be crucial. Now, I know some people say debates don't change attitudes, but just go back to that, the first of the great international debates, Martin, in 1960. You remember it, John
I do.
Kennedy and Richard Nixon. And it was claimed that John Kennedy, a sort of an obscure senator, opposed to the sitting vice president, that was crucial in him winning that election in 1960. And so I guess the moral of the story is here, don't underestimate the impact of television debates, even in 2025.
Well, the other one more recently, Paul, Peter, is of course the first debate between Biden and Trump, where Biden was so bad and couldn't finish a sentence that his own supporters decided that he had to go. that was pretty significant as well.
Well, yes, it was, and probably that debate, as far as the Democrats were concerned, did something for them that some of them weren't sort of game to do up to them, and that is go in and say to President Biden, tap him on the shoulder, and say, "Joe, I think it's time to go, and we let's move on. Let's look for another person." But of course, they left it too late.
Oh, exactly. I think there's not a lot you can do. And I think you're right about debates. Part of it is just about your leaders looking statesmanlike and not stuffing up and reassuring your supporters and your base and giving them some encouragement. The other thing that I wanted to ask you a little bit about is the Trump influence of the election, Peter. It's been overshadowing a federal election campaign. And obviously, normally, all the press is focusing on the two leaders and then other parties, minor parties, independents, etc. This time, the tariff discussion has been huge. It's been all over the news. Do you think it's influenced the campaign? And if so, in what way?
Well, it's introduced a huge note of uncertainty, Martin. I mean, as I said, Donald Trump has gatecrashed this election campaign, and the dilemma for both sides: how do you respond? And I think both sides responded correctly, and that is, there was an invitation to say, "All right, if you put a 10% tariff on us, oh, we'll put a 10% tariff on you." They resisted that, I know a lot of people would say, "Let's be hairy-chested about this. They can't push us around. We'll tell them sort of whatever." But no, I think the Prime Minister and the opposition leader did the correct thing. They sort of stepped back. Let's watch and see how this develops, and just what impact it has on us. A 10% tariff in the great scheme of things doesn't look very big, in fact. But each morning, I think the leaders must wake up and think, what's happened? What's the news from Washington overnight? And I just mentioned this to you. I was speaking to an elderly group of retirees yesterday, and one of the women came up to me. She said, "I can't sleep at night. because of what's happening in the United States. I said, why not? And she said, because of the impact that it is having on my superannuation. And I said, look, I'm sure it'll work out. I'm sure things will correct themselves. She said, well, I don't know, and I just can't sleep. And that was just someone from totally out of the blue. So I think that indicates that it ha is having a big impact, a much bigger impact than we think, not only on business, but on those people like her, self-funded retirees. So they are watching it very, very closely.
That's an excellent point about superannuation. And I think the other group, of course, is all of those exporter related businesses. They must be very nervous about this. They've got no idea how their goods are going to be priced in the US at the moment, which is one of, obviously a really big market, depending on the area.
And another thing, Martin, affecting us in the West particularly, if things in China do slow down because of these huge tariffs that are being thrown around, if things in China do slow down, then orders for iron ore presumably slow down as well. And if it's a significant reduction, then that has an impact on a direct impact on us here in the West. So I know we're remote geographically. But from the point of view of trade and financial issues, not that remote. So there is a reason to be, I guess, a little bit nervous and watch it closely. And let's hope it settles down.
And it will be really interesting, especially in seeing how it plays into people's sentiments. The other thing that let's turn to Western Australia a little bit here and have a bit of a think about how things are travelling here. I note the opposition leader's in town. I think he's about to make a bit of a keynote speech this morning. So he's been spending time here as well. And a big event coming up on Sunday, Peter.
Well, the Labor Party launch, Mr. Albanese, for the second election in a row, launching the Labor Party campaign in Perth. Pretty much unheard of from the days of previous leaders, some of whom were very reluctant even to come to Perth once a year, let alone as many times as Mr. Albanese. But look, I think it does indicate that he still believes Western Australia could be crucial to the result, whether Labor wins or whether Labor is able to form perhaps a minority government with other groups, it could be very, very crucial in Labor's hopes. So I think that's very clear in what Mr. Albanese has decided to do. And yeah, there'll be people in his home state of New South Wales. They might have their noses out of joint because of this, but they've made a very cold political decision that the West is the place to make the launch.
It certainly re-emphasises that WA is very important to the outcome of this election. There's no doubt about that. And there's quite a few seats here. Peter, what would be the seats that you would be recommending to watch in the next over the next fortnight?
Well, there's a huge contest going on in Curtin, and Kate Chaney under a strong challenge from the Liberals' Tom White, and that's a battle royal. And I think that last time round, Kate Chaney sort of got under the guard of the Liberals. Celia Hammond went in sort of a little bit underdone, I suppose, from the point of view of her campaign, and not necessarily her fault, but I think that's what happened with the Liberals in the seat of Curtin. Well, that was the feedback that I got. So the Liberals aren't going to let that happen this time. So the gloves are off in Curtin. Bullwinkle, the new seat of Bullwinkle, nominally a Labor seat, thanks to the McGowan factor last time round. But I think Bullwinkle will be fought out between Matt Moran, the Liberal, and Mia Davies from the National Party, and will be decided perhaps on preferences. Whoever finishes third could well be that their preferences could well decide the winner in Bullwinkle. So a possible Liberal gain there, but time will tell. And Tangney, I think perhaps of the other seats that the Labor Party won from the Liberals last time round, a huge contest there. So I think that's the other seat to watch. So at least three seats to watch: Curtin, Bullwinkle, Tangney. Martin, there's always a possibility of a surprise as well.
You never know. You never know. And there were other seats that were picked up last time that could be on if the swing's big enough, like Hasluck, which is now the metropolitan seat, and Pearce. But I think you're right. I think they're the three areas that I'd be watching very closely as well. We've talked a lot about the major parties. Peter, how do you think the Greens and Independents and other minor parties might fare this election?
Well, this is the Greens are interesting, and they usually poll around sort of an average of 10% or so. Their power base, the base for the Greens in the West, Fremantle, and also Curtin, and to some extent Perth. But so with regard to Fremantle, watch that. There's going to be a battle royal in Fremantle, and the incumbent, Labor's Josh Wilson, will have a real fight on his hands there. And that'll be preferences as well. And Greens could well be crucial there. I think the Greens are the major one of the parties there. Perhaps the Greens and the Greens have this very strong policy against fossil fuels, very strong policy against gas. And that will both be a plus and a minus. I think the voters are split on gas. There are others saying, well, gas is an important part of the economy. The opponents, I would say, it's a fossil fuel and it's damaging the climate, and they won't be convinced any other way. So the that'll split voters and could well have a crucial role on close finishes.
And a reminder for all Fremantle listeners here that there will be a great debate between the Fremantle candidates being hosted at Notre Dame next Tuesday evening. And that's promoted through the Fremantle Shipping News, amongst other places. Make sure you come along to that. And that will be an interesting race because Josh Wilson's not only facing the Greens and the Liberals, but also independent Kate Hewlett running for that seat as well. It's going to be a fairly full and bustling field.
And she polled well in the state seat, so she's having a second run.
She's
So
having a second
the
run.
yeah,
Last
so.
week we reported that she ran into some citizenship difficulties. It would appear that she's resolved those now, which is good for democracy. I always think it's great if as many people can run as possible, Peter. And let the public decide on these things. It is tricky.
And Martin, having attended some of those pre-election forums in Fremantle in previous years, I'd encourage Fremantle voters to get along on Tuesday night. It'll be very informative, but also, I'm sure, very entertaining.
Very lively indeed. Very lively. And if you get out your crystal ball, Peter, for the next couple of weeks, because we're only a few weeks out now. What would you say? What would you be expecting from now on in terms of, but the campaigns, and is there anything different we can expect to see?
Well, before I do that, remember voting starts in 11 days.
Absolutely.
Voting starts the Tuesday after Easter, April the 22nd. So the next 11 days are absolutely crucial to the major parties, and that crashes into Easter. So people won't be listening over Easter. So next week, absolutely crucial, Martin. I think that both parties will come out all guns blazing, and it'll be absolutely decisive. So therefore, the launch this weekend by Labor in Perth, Mr. Dutton and the Liberals need to get into full stride next week and make up ground. If they can do that, then they go in with voting starts on Tuesday week. They go in neck and neck. So I think all the gloves are off. The gloves will be off, and they'll go in hard. And the pressure on Peter Dutton, the pressure on Anthony Albanese, particularly the two leaders, it'll be the clash of the titans. As I say, next week absolutely crucial because Tuesday week is when early voting actually gets underway.
Well, I think the other thing that I would say as well is that school holidays begin in Western Australia basically after today. So that makes it, an interesting curveball. And then you've got Easter and then Anzac Day next week. So it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be harder for politicians to connect with voters over a really crucial period, Peter.
Well, I agree, that's the sort of, I guess, problem of having an election at this time. Normally, they're sort of earlier in the year, and perhaps Mr. Albanese would have liked to have had the election earlier, except for perhaps a Cyclone Alfie that upset the timetable. But yes, I agree. Easter, school holidays, the Anzac Day holiday coming up as well makes it very hard for the leaders to get their messages across. So the next week, I believe, is the last full week to get those messages across. And so Mr. Dutton in Perth today, Mr. Albanese in Perth on the weekend, and probably won't be coming back to the West after that, but it's full steam ahead between now and May 3.
Peter, thanks for your time as always. It's been a really lively conversation. Great to have you. And I know you'll be following everything just as keenly as myself over the next few 3 weeks.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much, Martin, for inviting me on. It is, I believe, an absolutely crucial election, and it'll be very, very tight.